Prakam we know are not sourcing on the Torah. The Prakam were, on the contrary, were made by Goyim, and the only reason we have them in the Megillah or in any other part of Tanakh is because in order to debate with the Goyim, so we had to be knowledgeable of their system of the breakdown. Nevertheless, where the ideas end in accordance with the Prakam, we are not concerned about the fact that the Prakam happened to coincide with the with the breakdown of the Inyanim, the real breakdown of the Inyanim. Now, the first breakdown is from Vayivi Melech Hashverosh until the end of Perek Aleph, Achar Dvarim Ha'Eilah. And really, this could be broken down into two parts. The first Perek is until Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vatamoinim Al Kavashti. That's the first Perek. And from there, from Vayomer Melech Hacham Yedei Ha'Itim, till... Well, we can actually break it down. If you go follow the Prakam, it goes like this. Vayam el hacham yereitim until Vayam memuchan, Pasuk Tez Zayin. And from Pasuk Tez Zayin until the end of the Perek, till Achar Dvarim Ha'Eilah. Okay, the breakdown is as follows. In this area, we have defined the character of the two individuals that are responsible for the situation of the Nes Purim. Okay. The first is a description of the character of Ahasuerus. And with this we say that Ahasuerus was basically Taiva-centric. His whole essence was living the life of Taiva. This we find from a few psukim. First of all, Vashkes Bechleizo V'cheilim Mikelim Shonim. We mentioned, what does it mean V'cheilim Mikelim Shonim? Because there is such a thing as social law. Society, in other words, which means that there's certain patterns, of etiquette, etc. And these patterns of etiquette have their purpose, nothing more than to suppress or to hide the instinct of taiva. But Ahasuerus was a man of complete taiva, open taiva. That's why he didn't care. Kelim mikelim shonim means no laws of no social law. There's no society, no rules of society, no etiquette, and no sophistication. Just plain taiva. Now, the next part is with the melech, because Vashti refused. Vashti was also part of the melech, part of taiva. She was supposed to appear in the nude. So then she refused. When she refused, so the melech called a meeting, and at the meeting, that's calling the meeting, is from Pasuk Yud Gimel, next pair, from Pasuk Yud Gimel until Tezayin, calling the meeting. Then, Vayema Mamuchon Lefnei HaMelech Vasarim, this is describing the character of Haman. Haman's character was not taiva-centric, but was egocentric. And Haman immediately, because of his emotions, he sensed immediately that this could be an ego problem, because of the fact that the women will insist upon their rights. Of course, when he expressed it to the Melech, he expressed it in terms of practicality for the Malchus. So both are interested in Malchus. But Haman's interest in Malchus is ego, whereas Ahasuerus' interest in Malchus is taiva. Mishta, the whole concept of Mishta, of course, by Ahasuerus, obviously is orgy. Now, therefore, in the first Perek, you have the description of the two characters that are involved. Namely, the taiva-centric man, Ahasuerus, and the egocentric man, who is Haman. These two factors will interrelate in order to bring about the facts that precipitate the Nes of Purim. In passing, we discussed which is the best life. The life in terms of the best of the worst, that is. The taiva, who is better off, in other words? The man of taiva or the man of ego? And we mentioned the fact that the philosophers say, Plato mentions, gives an argument, he says, it would seem that the man of honor is better off, the man of ego. Why? Because the man of ego everybody has taiva. And the ability for ego are only a few. And it would seem that the people who have the opportunity for ego choose ego on the whole. Of course, we mentioned that this is no raya. Why? Because the choice, it only shows one thing. It can only show if the facts are true. We didn't really take a census. He had a chashosh as a man who could have enjoyed ego, but he preferred taiva, straight taiva. So, as we'll prove later also, that he was definitely, his essence was taiva. But even if the facts should be so, it would only show one thing, that the psychic energy immediately attached itself to ego. But does not show us the best life, because people act in accordance with the way that the taiva immediately people follow what the taiva immediately chooses. They don't really follow the what reasoning chooses. In other words, the taiva can immediately take a gratification which will in the end be harmful, but the unintelligent person will choose that route. So it does not prove that because people choose it, it is the best. So we said like this. Which one is the best? We said that the man of taiva at least is involved in a reality. There is a physical enjoyment. But the man of ego is involved in the completely artificial fantasy of the mind. Because ego is non-existent in external reality. It's only something which in his mind he considers to be true. So you will ask me, so what's the difference? But still each one is enjoying his own thing. So the answer is as follows. Since there is no reality, he has to change reality in order to act as a base for his enjoyment, which is ego. So that the reality must conform to a certain pattern in which he can have his fantasy. So he requires a second thing. He must change reality. He must keep reality in a certain condition. Whereas the man of taiva, reality conforms immediately to his gratification. It's just a matter of getting the gratification. Or to put it more simply, since ego is artificial, the recognition of the fact that it's artificial must always be hidden by reality. That's why by Haman, when Mordechai was not kareya mishtachav alei, it wasn't simply a matter of him not getting his ego. But this breaks through the entire fantasy, so that the entire pleasure is in danger because of external reality. Whereas the man of taiva, his pleasure isn't in danger because of external reality. He simply has to go after it and get it. Well, the man of ego must always have reality conform to a certain pattern in which his initial basis is not in jeopardy. That was a story with Diogenes and Alexander the Great. When Alexander the Great asked him what he wants, I'll give him anything he wants, and he said, just move out of the sunlight. This was a complete breakdown of Alexander the Great's entire psychic attachment. So that the man of honor, since his enjoyment isn't real, there's always the danger of reality breaking through and showing him that he has no enjoyment, that he's just simply a waste of time. Whereas the man of taiva does not have that danger. Therefore, we say that the man of the taiva is certainly better off of the two. Okay. So to sum it up, the first parak is the two forces involved, the taiva maniac and the egomaniac. Again, Vashiach Hados Ein Onish. Now, just to go back to the other point, to prove that Achashverosh is simply involved with Taiva, Vashiach Hados Ein Onish, which means there's no formality, no tos, simply Taiva. All his rule was one thing, just enjoy yourself as much as you can. No inhibitions on the physical pleasures. And now we go to Beis. In Beis, there's two parts. From Aleph until the end of the parsha, which is Pasuk Yutes, and then Pasuk Chaf Aleph till the end of the parsha, till Gimel. Okay. So in Beis we said we find the element of the Ashgacha. The element of the Ashgacha. Two factors. One effect of Ashgacha was that Esther was chosen, and two, by Yomi Mohaim, that Mordechai did an act which saved the king's life. Okay, these two factors are the Ashgacha. Now, again from Beis we see that Achashverosh was a complete taiva maniac. Why? Because Achashverosh, ordinarily a king chooses a queen that comes from royalty, from some type of important genealogy. But here, on the contrary, he didn't care who it was. It was simply a matter of the most beautiful, the one that gave him the most taiva. As a matter of fact, the reason why Esther was not Megedes Amma Malarata was because she really came from royalty, and she didn't want to be chosen. But nevertheless, we see that they misjudged Ahasuerus. They misjudged how far of a type of maniac he was, because he didn't care. He just went after the type and he chose her. In the Pasuk Aleph, it says, Achad Var Ma'ela, we're just mentioning parenthetically, Zohar Svashti Vesher Sosa Vesher Nigzara Leha. Yeah, Rashi says again over there, Zohar Svashti Es Yofyo Venetav. He remembered her beauty and he became depressed. So it was simply a matter of physical taiva. Yeah. So that now, to sum it up, we have the three forces that are operating. We have the taiva maniac, then the egomaniac working on him, and then the hashgacha itself. These three forces precipitate the entire event of the Megillah. Here's one side point. In the first pasuk where it mentions Ve'es Asher Nigzar Aleha, it would appear that there was some element of remorse in Ahasuerus when he remembered what happened. This breakdown of Perek Beis and Gimel is according to Masera as well. Because it's Mandamar Daf Yutes, Amud Aleph, where you read the Megillah from, Rav Yesi Emer Me'achad Var Ma'ela. So Achad Var Ma'ela, because that's the beginning of the story of Haman. Now the next Perek is Gimel. Gimel is broken up into two prakim. One is from Pasuk Aleph until Pasuk Zion, and then from Pasuk Ches until Dalet. Okay. Now the first perek, of course, the first perek is Achad Var Ma'ela Gidel Amachashkeres Haman Amdaso Agogi Vayinaseyu. This is where Haman's egomania comes. Egomania is brought out into the open, brought out into reality. See, we said like this also, why they first refer to him as Memuchan and later as Haman? Because the pshat is that an emotion requires a setting in order to really be fully developed. It has to be nurtured by a setting. That's why many people look at the different people in Hollywood, different situations, they wonder how come they get so crazy. The answer is they're just as crazy as those people. The only thing is that they never had the opportunities that those people have. Now, when Gidal HaMelech HaShver Shalom Doso Gog Vayinas Eyu, that's when he became an egomania in reality. That's when it was really brought out. Before, he was an egomaniac in potentia, when he was Mamuchan. But then it was really brought out because reality was able to corroborate his inner desires. Then, from that's Pasuk, that's the first part. Then Pasuk Ches, from Ches to the end, is the interplay between the two forces. The egomaniac working on the typomaniac. That was when he said, he made the suggestion, he saw that it wasn't just Mordechai, because Mordechai was a blow to his entire taiva, because Mordechai always was a threat that his that he isn't really great. There's no greatness, and it was a threat, as we explained, a threat to the very essence of his taiva, which is his ego. Okay, so then we said like this. So what? He investigated to find out whether Mordechai is an isolated case, so in which case he'd have to be wiped out just himself. And he found out, no, that it was an entire philosophy. This philosophy does not lend itself to Haman's egomania, so therefore it must be stamped out. But again, the way he presented it to the Melech was not in terms of ego, but purely in terms of taiva. Because we see, when he said like this, he said, V'dosehem yeshna mechafuz farbenon v'chom v'zavachal v'dosehem shoynes mikolam. So Rashi says, V'dosehem melech einem osim. What's V'dosehem melech einem osim? Plain pshat is simply they don't do the laws of the king, so it's a degradation to the king. Not Rashi's loseis mas lavodos ha-melech, to give money. Why? Because the only thing that bothered the Ahasuerus was, no, they don't do the king's will so well. So it doesn't break down the ego a little bit. He doesn't care. His main concern is not ego. His main concern is to have taiva. And if the Jews economically are good for the Ahasuerus, he will keep them, because his main concern is simply taiva, money. But he says, no, they don't give the money to the melech. And ein shev la-melech, ein shev la-nicham, it's not worth it. Ein chashash, ein betah. There's no money involved in it. Then, and also in the pasuk itself, he says, "Im alach tevi ikasiv la'abdom va'aser asalafim kikar kesef eshkol de yisayam alach alav eginzei melech." Pasuk tes. He himself will give more money to the melech. So again, you see that Haman translated his egomania into taiva, so that Ahasuerus will buy it. So this, in the end of Gimel, this last perek, is the perek in which it shows how one force operates on the other. The force of Haman, egomania, on the Ahasuerus, on the taiva maniac. Now, the next part is Perek Dalet and Hey. From there, it's one parsha. From Umar Chayodas Kol Asher Nasa, goes straight through until Balailahu Nodadosh Nasa Melech. What is the essence of this parsha? The essence of this before, in Perek Gimel, we had the end of Perek Gimel, we had the irrational action. And you have the, in other words, the full development of Haman's egomania and Haman's and the irrational action by Haman and Achashverosh. Then, from a Mordechai Yodas Kol Asher Nasa Tol Balailahu, you have the rational action. Okay. But there's one difference between the rational action and between the irrational. The irrational simply follows from the emotions, but the rational is first has a prerequisite, namely, for the person to bring himself into the proper state so that he can operate properly. And this really is from Mordechai Yodas Kol Asher Nasa. Nothing was done yet. The Ilbash Sakva Efer. This was simply now. The demand of rationality was to concentrate on the self. To raise the Jews to a higher level so that they could do the proper performance. That's the first thing is tshuva. Then also you have the debate between Mordechai and Esther. That was because the question of what was the rational thing to do. And she thought Esther argued one way, Mordechai argued the other way, until Mordechai prevailed. Then in Perek, from the beginning of Perek, you have the actual performance on the part of Esther. First there was the plan, and then there was the actual performance on the part of Esther. Okay. So that under the rational action, you have two parts. You have the part which is the removal of from the emotions. That's sakva efer, time, that's tshuva. That's the first thing, to bring the person to improve the state of the individual. That's the first thing to do. And then the action which results from the, then action. But first there must be the removal of the emotions from the physical world, and a return of the emotions to the true world. The next breakdown is from Balailahu that's the entire Vav, until Pasukei and Perek Zion. That's the next parsha. From Vayerma HaMelech HaChashverosh Emelech Tamakum Yuzev Ezehu. Yeah. What is the breakdown of this perek? This perek is simply the action of the Ashgacha. What actually happened here is as follows. That until now, Haman was considered the Mishneh LaMelech. Second in command to the king. But Balailahu was the entire change. Why? What was the change? The change was this. Achashverosh started to have his doubts. And he was thinking about the Sefer Zechariah. Something was bothering him. When he took a look at Sefer Zechariah, he saw that there was reason to doubt the loyalty of Haman. Because Haman, it would appear, made a terrible blunder. Here Mordechai was a man who saved the Melech, saved the king. And when a person, part of the main thing in the kingdom is that people should be prompted to do things that are loyal to the Melech and be dissuaded from doing things that are harmful to the Melech. How is this done? By giving accolades and awards to those who demonstrate loyalty to the king. Now this is an opportunity which is very important for the Melech. The Melech should always be sure to praise those that are loyal to him, so that his other subjects realize that such an individual is rewarded, and they too will want to strive to live up to that image and receive those awards. So over here, Haman made a terrible oversight. Why? Because here is Mordechai, who saved the life of the king, and he was well known in the whole kingdom. And what happens? What happens is that, on the contrary, rather than being rewarded, he's put to death. So this will show that the king is unjust. There could be this is a very negative influence on the rest of his subjects. So it would appear from here that to the Melech, it appeared from here to the Melech that Haman is not really such a wonderful Sheni LaMelech as he thought.
is
the blunder they committed was too great. It was one in which definitely showed that Haman has ulterior motives in what he does. Because here he decides to kill out all the Jews, I mean, without any exception. And in so doing, he kills Mordechai and overlooks the very important act of showing favor to those who are loyal to the Melech. Yeah, two things occurred over here. One was Haman's downfall. This is Haman. That's why the Melech precisely told Haman to do it. Take the Levush and the Suska Shadibata. Why? Because this was really an act of vengeance on Haman. Two things were done. First of all, Haman fell. That's why it says, Limparlefanov meant one thing. That the Melech, when he told him to take Mordechai on the Sus, this was an act of degradation to Haman. And to show him just the contrary. Apparently the Melech sensed that there's a rivalry here between Haman and Mordechai. And Haman simply wants to destroy Mordechai out of rivalry, not out of loyalty to the Melech. If this is the case, the Melech told him just the opposite. You go and you show the greatest respect to Mordechai. So two things occur. One was Haman's downfall, and the second factor also, that Mordechai was raised to the level of a very loyal servant of the Melech, and a very important servant of the Melech. Why? Because, you see, the Melech, a person in power, must always believe in those who are his aides and his advisors. Simply, he emotionally must believe in them. Why? Because if they're no good, he has nobody else. So in order to remove one aide, he has to have a substitute, somebody else. And here Mordechai appeared as a substitute. That's why you see, it says, in the beginning of Ches, Bayomu Nasa Melech HaRashos Lesta Malkos Beis Haman Tzor Yehudim, U'Mordechai Bolech Yasa Melech Tabata Shehever Mehaman Vayitna LaMordechai, Perek Ches Pasuk Beis. He took it from Haman to Mordechai was the substitute. So in Perek Vav, the Ashgacha was, this is where the Ashgacha was at work. The Ashgacha was, this is the action of the Ashgacha. The action of Ashgacha was simply that Haman should be downtrodden and Mordechai should be raised. And then, of course, the natural result was the Mishteh Hayayin. The Mishteh Hayayin, this is all part of the Ashgacha, because this was a natural result. Mishteh Hayayin Esther Malka. And then, from Pasuk Hay until Vachamasa Melech Shachacha, the end of Zion, is the next installment in the Megillah. What's this next installment? This is the result of the Ashgacha. The result of the Ashgacha was what Achashverosh did. So that this is the breakdown. First, from Balailu Nodah Shnasa Melech was the Ashgacha itself. And then, from Vayomer HaMelech Achashverosh Riemel Esther Malka Miu Zeve Ezehu, this is the result of the Ashgacha. Until Ches. Okay. To put it a little better, from Balaila Hahu, from the beginning of Vav until the end of Dalid, Zion Dalid, is really the interplay of forces. It's the interplay of forces between the Ashgacha and the Melech. This is the other interplay. The first interplay of forces was the one that resulted in the evil. That was the interplay between Haman and Achashverosh. Now there's the opposite, the interplay between the Ashgacha as expressed directly by the act of God and also through Esther. The Ashgacha and Achashverosh. Okay. You see, Esther is really included in this. In other words, from the Psukim Vatan, Esther Malka Vatimer is all included as in the same parak as the same parsha as the Ashgacha. Why? Because this is nothing more. Esther is only the individual who is carrying out the design of the Ashgacha. So that, but from Balaila Hahu until Zion Hay is the design of the Ashgacha. It's interesting. We mentioned that Haman was accused of that Achashverosh suspected that Haman was really only interested in his own personal rivalry because of the oversight with Mordechai. And I think this is expressed in the pasuk Hagam Lichbeishes Hamalka Imi Barboyes when. Perek Zion Pasuk Ches. What does that mean? Because the Rav once I mentioned that one of the signs of taking over conquest is when the king conquers a country, he takes over all the queens for himself. It's a sign that he's the new king. So Hagam Lechush Malkim Abayas means that he recognizes egomania. There was one more factor which we couldn't prove, but we mentioned it anyways. That when Esther mentioned that Haman wants to destroy her, so really, in the pasuk in the beginning of Beis, Zachar Vashti Vesher Asos Vesher Nigzar Alea, it would appear that there was an element of remorse at the loss of his title of Vashti. And that was due to Haman's suggestion. So once again, when he made the suggestion, there is no doubt that the hatred was supported by the unconscious hate of the past as well, from the incident of Vashti. Now the next parak is from parsha, in other words, is from Bayomahu, from Ches Aleph till Gimel. This is also the result of the Hashgacha, but the result of the Hashgacha is broken down into two parts, one vis-a-vis Haman and two vis-a-vis Mordechai. And from Bayomahu, Nasanoha Hashash is vis-a-vis Mordechai. Okay. Now the next parak is Vatosef Esther V'davos Neham Melech until Kiechacha Uchal V'Reisi Vav. And then you go from Zion straight through till Vatichtev, till Tess Chav Tess. Now this is the breakdown of the Nes itself. Now under the breakdown of the Nes itself, you have like this. In other words, once again, from Vatesef Esther, from Pasuk Gimel, Perikhes Pasuk Gimel, till Zion are the actions that precipitate, the action of Esther that precipitates the Nes. Then from there until Vatichtev Esther, almost near the end of the Megillah, is the Nes itself. But the Nes itself is broken down into two parts. The actual performance of the Nes, which is included in Umordechai Yotzom Lefnei HaMelech, B'Levush Malchus Techeles Vachur, you see, and from there, from Mordechai Yotzom Lefnei HaMelech, B'Levush Malchus Techeles Vachur, that's the actual Nes, that Mordechai was actually brought into this height, and Vishnev Nikalu Yehudim Barayim, the whole Maisa HaNes, that's one part. And before that you have the decree which was given out by Ahasuerus to bring about the Nes. So in other words, you have Esther's action, Ahasuerus's action, and then the actual Nes itself from Mordechai Yosef HaMelech. Then you have at the end of the Megillah, you have two more parshas. One is Vatichtev Esther Makom Asavichal Melech, it's called Tekef. That's Ktzivas HaMegillah, that it became Kisvei Kedesh, and the Kviyas HaMitzvahs of Purim, that's in that perek. And the last one is Vayosam Melech Hashverosh Masal Al Horetz V'Iyei Hayom. That's the magnitude of the Nes. So you have the actual Nes, you have the result of the Nes, well, then you have the Mitzvahs Purim, and then you have the size of the Nes. The only thing, one more point I wanted to mention was that the Chazal say Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. So Kimu V'Kiblu means the Kvar so was raised to a higher level. This raising to a higher level, of course, took place, well, we said before, Mordechai Yodas Kvashir Naso Perek Dalad, because as a result of the situation, the whole situation, as described before, was an instrument to raise Kvar Yisrael to a higher level. The Tzara is one which brings the rationality to the person who's capable of it. Okay. So to review, we have like this. The first part of the Megillah is the two factors involved: the character of Ahasuerus, the taiva-centered man, and the character of Haman, the ego-centered man. Then next you have the Hashgacha. So those are the three factors that are involved, and that's the setting. The setting is these. The interplay between these three forces will determine the entire Megillah. Of course, the two factors in the Hashgacha, there was two factors: Esther and also Mordechai. So Esther was that she was chosen as queen, and Mordechai overheard Bixam HaSeresh. Right, but those are basically the interplay of the three factors. Then next you have the evil action, the evil performance on the part of Haman, and then you have the virtuous performance on the part of Mordechai. Then you have the intercession after the virtuous performance, then you have the intercession of the Ashgacha, which is Balayla Hahu, and that's Balayla Hahu, the intercession of the Ashgacha, which showed the downfall of Haman, where Ahasuerus broke Haman's ego because he sensed that Haman was interested in his ego because he failed to be loyal to the king and to praise Mordechai, to induce loyalty in his subjects. And that was the intercession of the Hashgacha. Then you have the actual performance of the Nes itself. And then you have the Halachos Kviyas Hilchos Purim. And then you have the magnitude of the Nes. That's the basic format without the subdivision.
part of a separate shiur that dealt with the point of the petition of the ultimatum. It is not a part of the shiur that we just heard.
She has 11 months. So she was right, arguing with her. Why are you came down her like she this was terrible, you know? After Dami is an Eskik, we molly based on Melach and Mikol and Yehudim, don't think you're going to save your life. She wasn't saying that. Her argument was an actual one. Now it's not going to fix their right. But why? Why was it worth 6 weeks? What do you think? Just boom. Had she waited. That's the point. You have a choice. You have to act now. You have to act. Now the question is act now or later. Now why should you say you have to act now? Because what will happen, you have to view what will happen if you act later. You have to view what happens if you're going to act later against what happens if you act now, right? Now what Mordechai was saying was one thing, that if you act later, you'll be right. Why? Because if you act later, it's demonstrated. One thing, that it demonstrates that you can tolerate the idea of the Jews being destroyed. Because if it was intolerable, then the king knows that he would have come right away. He said, the king went out on the 13th, right? 13th of Nisan. Or if it becomes the 13th of Iyar. So the king knows right away that she could tolerate this. Apparently she didn't come right away. Why didn't she come right away? Because she was afraid to risk her life. So she's afraid to risk her life. In other words, when it comes to a question of risking her life against the Jews, so her life comes first, she's afraid to risk her life. So the king would know very simply, he would know that when it's a toss between her life and the Jews, her life is first. Right? Then he'd know that she could tolerate it. It's not something that she can't do without. You see? And the king doesn't care about her either. The king just cares about one thing. About having her for himself. That's all. But he doesn't really care about her. It's something that he, let's say she has my sister. He says, look it over. Wait a few years. He doesn't really care about her feelings. You see? The only thing that's going to move the king is a loss. A personal loss. His own tithes. He loses part of something he wants. So therefore, as long as she would be come right now, it would show that she's afraid to risk her life. Right? Because in her life, she's not going to risk her life for the Jew. So therefore, it's not something which she can't do without. She can't do well without the Jew. She might not be too comfortable. She'll get over it in a while. Then Mordechai knew that he was supposed to do it. Right? No. But why? Let me understand. Why did she make a mistake, really? Why did she make a mistake? Now she'll be mullet based on Malcolm Kala Hidden. You think you're going to save your life. Right? Apparently your fear of death is really what's standing in the way, psychological fear of death. Now the thing is like this. Where is the purpose of that fear of death? But the fear of death over here is working in a very subtle way. See, there are two ways that you can approach the king. One way is out of petition the king, and the other way is with an ultimatum. In other words, either you give me this, or else I can't live. Okay, I don't want it, or else I'm nonsense. Okay? Now, an ultimatum takes a certain amount of bravery. But a petition, anybody more or less can go petition. Petition, I'm not doing anything wrong, please, I'm asking, I'm pleading. Her idea was the idea of petition. That was her idea. You see? That's why she said, let me wait. Petition is good to wait for a situation. If you ask me mercy, situation is right. You know what I mean? It's a good situation. You don't just jump in and ask. But if it's an ultimatum doesn't matter when. An ultimatum has to be at the time. That's it. Okay? Her approach was one of petition. But Mordechai said, no. Petition in this case is going to work. This case has to be an ultimatum. Ultimatum, you can't say you're going to wait till later. Nope. So it was that they can't be destroyed. Something will happen. Okay? But he knew also that he prevented from realizing the urgency of the situation. They have to do something. Okay? But the point is that over here he realized they had to be through ultimatum. Now why did but he wasn't as if he wasn't to petition? Why did he told her? Why is he wasn't to petition? Because they're unconscious of death. Because he was operating. Fear of death prevents us from approaching the Melech. in terms of an ultimatum. That's what he showed her. He showed her there's something psychological working on you that's preventing you from approaching the TV in terms of an ultimatum, and that's the fear of death. The unconscious fear of death was working on in that sense. So therefore, she was able to approach him in terms of a petition. Petition said, I won't do a job over here. All right to assume, but the person never has the right to assume that he has knowledge of the effect. Okay? Even in this situation where the whole thing looks perfect, right? Now it's a going to say, and for the theory, maybe the person acts rationally has the right to assume that there's a possibility that this is what that stuff is doing, but never can you assume that this stuff is going to be how do you know it's the effect? Now we know that it's the effect because of the event, and also that was written in with Luchatetic. They know that's the, but the otherwise you can't really know. Before the person, otherwise you can't really know. Yes. Different forces are operating on him, and to say, okay, this is, you're right, this is wrong. Now I have to overcome this. That was a good thing. So that's the essence of the whole super. I mean, at that moment is the whole, that's the point. That's the point of the, it's a very little point. Yeah.